When you stop to look at a painting, like a still life. Oh boy, already with the art terminology? If you can bear with me, it's a little visual arts vocab that will cut us a big slice of delicious cake right here at the beginning of this episode. The clue of the crumbling cake. And who's up for cake and spooky stories? As we look at our first clue, several cake still life paintings. But what exactly is a still life? At first glance, a portrait, a landscape, and even architecture or a building, they're sitting still, right? Yeah, but a still life is different. A still life is a category of artwork that dates back to the 1600s, a collection of things brought together, inanimate, gathered often on a table for the artist to work from and reference. The artist can work with this grouping of items coming back over one or more sessions to complete the drawing or painting. Nothing in the group changes from session to session. The place for the artist's chair can even be marked with masking tape to make sure they end up in the correct spot to work from. Still lifes for 16th and 17th century Dutch may be made up of food like fruit, grapes, flowers, like on The Secret of the Missing Flowers. So there's flowers, cheese, bread, and yes, cake, wine goblets, reflective surfaces of serving dishes. One example, artist Clara Peters took things to a level that might surprise you. Daily Art Magazine shares, quote, "Probably she is most famous for enriching her still lifes with her hidden self-portrait reflected in the objects on the table. In Still Life with Flowers, a silver gilt goblet, dried fruit, sweetmeats, breadsticks, wine, and a pewter pitcher, the artist painted her portrait 3 times in the goblet and 4 times on the pewter jug, aside from having a role as a signature. Painting reflections were a challenge to artists to show off their mastery. She also had a particular way of signing her work, often hidden. 6 out of her 39 known paintings include the same ornate silver knife that is inscribed with her name, Clara Peters," unquote. Looking for strange and unexpected Easter eggs like these may seem a little too tedious, or maybe they do make you a little curious. You'd be right on both accounts. I mean, why do people end up standing there in museums, studying paintings, drawings, and sculpture? This could be one reason. In these paintings, is a goblet half full or half empty? What were they going for? Life used up? Or life to be enjoyed? Or something else, like maybe the artist got thirsty and just drank some of it, but it's not likely because it was purposeful. Besides looking at all of the details from the mastery of a painting, of beautiful, intricate lace on the cuff of a sleeve, to the ombre fading and veins in flower petals, or impressionist brush strokes up close. There may be mystery built into the composition, maybe not as difficult to unravel as an Agatha Christie novel, but then again, maybe there are icons representing meaning, visual bookmarks that are part of the story, like a skull or a blown-out candle, representing death. To the art world, this last bit acts as the reminders, memento mori, directly translated from Latin, remember death. Hi there, spooky art-loving friends. Welcome to the Whispering Gallery podcast. I'll be your docent, Suzanne Nicolaisen. Let's begin our story tonight by following the shadows draping the gallery halls that are overflowing with paranormal and strange art mysteries to reach the temporary cake exhibit. But it's not all still-life cake paintings, gum paste flower sculpture, buttercream, candle magic and sprinkles. There's more than a dash of memento mori and vanitas. There's a haunted bakery and fold in together prophetic cakes, cakes to bestow luck, cake rituals, and even witch's cake from the Salem witch trials in 1691. Wow. Thanks for joining me this evening. It's sure getting dark fast tonight. Cake was not initially what this episode was about. I mean, that's a lot of area to cover. Cakes generally include sugar, butter, eggs, vanilla, flour, baking powder, or a leavener, and salt, just as the basics. I started researching the lovely artisan gum paste flowers that decorate cakes as a kind of reverse memento mori of sorts. The small sculpture is there from the start, sorta kinda. Not withering away, but also not actually meant to eat. Surviving the cake and the event it was made for as a keepsake after the cake has been eaten and crumbs cleared away. Grimly, these small sculpted flowers could survive the person they were made for. But the nature of the sculpture is not to wither and decay as fresh flowers on a cake would, so their unnaturally long lives might hint for us to remember death. Memento mortis est postea. Hopefully I got that sort of close. It's more of, remember, death comes later. So, pieces of a Neapolitan cake could have deeper meaning than a lighthearted subject, given the point of view. Giving us more to consider than a blatant skull, the cake slice is fresh. But what is to come is a breakdown into crumbling cake, if it's not eaten first. I'd like to think the art professor Wayne Thiebaud, known for his cake paintings, had a delicious path to follow with each painting and must have had some friends at the local bakeries. How else might death be depicted in such a worldwide dessert tied to life? Blown-out birthday candles with smoke hanging in the air. This is one reminder in fine art still life paintings of death. And while looking at still life paintings with more understanding, they may not actually scare you to death, but give us a moment to ponder the philosophy of our very existence. Maybe pick up some Hostess cupcakes. Reading the ingredients also might give you pause. Or a cupcake or slice of cake from the bakery. Maybe you even might want to bake a cake, just because we're all here talking about them. If you do have a memorable cake you've made, share a photo to our page on Facebook. I've been watching cake decorating and baking documentaries, so I'll share some of the best takeaways later in this episode. So go ahead and fill up your WGP Whispering Gallery podcast mug, find your favorite chair, or get ready to listen wherever you are. At work, making dinner, commuting, doing chores, going to sleep. Flashlights in hand? Or rather, fork and slice of cake? I'll start by serving up slices of still life cake, art, frozen in time, in their best possible state. A slice ready for you to eat. There's a sweet bakery case, a version of fruit goblets and cake. Let's head into the bakery of still life's past. The paintings of cakes in our initial exhibit investigation are in the pop art, contemporary, and neoclassical art periods. As you can imagine, there are a lot of paintings of cakes. There is a small curated group of cake paintings related to this episode at facebook.com/whisperinggallerystories. Go see them for the beautiful cherry chocolate cake reflecting the light. It really is a lovely rendition. The abstract mocha layered cake you can imagine into being real. And another cake painted with such thick paint, it emulates being painted in frosting. Let's take a look at three of the paintings from this group. The first is Cake Slice by Wayne Thiebaud in 1979. A lonely slice of three-layer Neapolitan cake with chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry layers wrapped in white frosting. The cake slice is set at a diagonal, the frosting end of the cake up toward the upper left, coming together down at the bottom right on a pale mint green plate. It kind of looks like there might be two plates stacked. No fork, no milk, beige background. This was from WikiArt, Fair Use, 1979. And in particular, the style is pop art, genre still life. Next up is Still Life, Wine, Cakes, Grapes, by Raphael Peel, an American in 1818. This is more of the still life you might expect to come across in a museum. The Met states, quote, Peel's tightly grouped still lives are often permeated with a delicate melancholy akin to that which characterized the life of the artist, unquote. The grouping is of a glass goblet full of wine, fresh green grapes, a cake cut into quarters, what might be rosebush leaves in the background, and a not as fresh stem of red grapes. Some of those grapes are dying and shriveled. Maybe a life/death reference, memento mori, remember death, that life is not forever. It looks like there are currants in the cake, about which Mark Twain once wrote, quote, nothing seems to please a fly so much as to be taken for a currant, and if it can be baked in a cake and palmed off on the unwary, it dies happy, unquote. This was Oil on Wood, on view at the Met Fifth Avenue, Gallery 756. It's found on metmuseum.org, 11737. Snowball painting by Andrea Nally, uploaded to fineartamerica.com June 1st, 2013. This is a close-up of a crop on two Hostess pink snowball cupcakes. One cupcake has a bite taken out of it. You see colors of the deep chocolate cake, white marshmallow and pink sugar placed on a smoky green-blue surface. The pink sugar is so light, as though a frost of pink on a cold morning. This is at fineartamerica.com/art/paintings/hostess+cupcake. Cake is on the timeline. The clock is ticking pretty much out of the oven, right? How long do we have until the cake is no longer fresh, but stale and ultimately crumbling apart? When does a cake give up the ghost and go into complete basement bottom prices? When is it stale? You can't exactly make croutons from stale cake, after all. What can you do with all the dried-out cake crumbs? Fresh cake crumbled plus frosting, mashed together and rolled into balls dipped in chocolate, equals cake pops. So far, we haven't really found any spooky Oz fabulas, spooky art stories, but they're coming. Oh yes, my friends. How about we get this party started with a nice ghost story? If I was the ghost, how about some respect, human? I'll show you a nice ghost story. Yikes, no disrespect meant. And from WWLTV.com, a Beta Springs bakery haunted owner says, author Jacqueline Quinn, shared under fair use.
Here is a story to get you in the Halloween spirit. A bakery in Abita Springs has yet to figure out why they hear noises that can't be explained, and why their supplies are mysteriously moved.
Jacqueline Quinn takes us on a tour of a haunted bakery with a psychic medium.
Some say the treats at the Maple Street Bakery are out of this world, and others say it's something else that's out of this world.
When I found this place to rent, I met up with the real estate agent in which he told me the price. You know, I thought, that can't be right.
Jan Liggett tells us the few businesses before her were too scared to stay long. She recalls the insurance agent before her.
One time a cop came in and told me that when she was here, their alarm went off, and when he came by to check it out, the blinds were going up and down by themselves.
Before signing the lease, she was warned the building was haunted.
You know, I was excited about opening the business, so I kind of tried to ignore a lot of the things.
Liggett and other family members would later find out some things were hard to ignore.
My husband woke up in the middle of the night. I asked him why he got up, and he said the whole bed was shaking.
There would be some times at night where I would hear little whispers and little voices.
Liggett and her son Connor both noticed the presence of a particular man in the late hours.
It just kept staring, just kept looking.
Right here?
Right by the coffees. Tried to ignore it. But then when I went back and looked up again, he was still there.
We reached out to Vanessa Hogle, a psychic medium visiting from Oklahoma.
And I'm still seeing the gentleman. I can't help but see him.
We told her nothing of the building's history before she arrived.
5758. Bless him, the little comb over.
She says there's a man named Charles hanging around. He might have been a patient when the building was a convalescent home or a resident when it was just a house.
I don't sense anything negative at all.
Okay.
I do believe what actually ran up on the porch and ran back was the victim of the accident that happened about a quarter of a mile that way.
Hogle believes the Liggetts have nothing to fear and suggested they acknowledge the lonely spirit Charles out of courtesy. And it's possible the ghosts have taken a liking to the food.
A lot of my customers would say that. They come in and say, God, it doesn't surprise me because it smells awesome in here.
In Abita Springs, Jacqueline Quinn, Eyewitness News.
All right, well, that is certainly spooky.
Remember the dark twilight snack scene of the still life painting Wine, Cake, and Grapes? Why such a somber mood for the snack? Was the painting varnished? Did that change color over time? Some of the red grapes were beginning to shrivel and die. Perhaps a small taste of memento mori. But what is this memento mori business? The Tate Museum, one of the biggest museums of modern and contemporary art in the London borough of Southwark, writes, quote, memento mori is a Latin phrase meaning, remember, you must die. A basic memento mori painting would be a portrait with a skull, but other symbols commonly found are hourglasses or clocks, extinguished or guttering candles, fruit, and flowers. Unquote. That's from tate.org.uk. Around the 1700s in Europe, specifically the Netherlands, memento mori gained momentum as a genre. So we've got sci-fi, fantasy, westerns, mystery, horror, memento mori, remember death. The Dutch weren't the only culture to recognize it. For example, the Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead celebrations coming from Mexico. Check out the Sweet Mystery of Sugar Skulls episode for more about the Day of the Dead. Quote, think on the ephemeral, why is it every time there's one word that really takes me down? Think on the ephemeral nature of life and the possibility of sudden death. Remember death. It does seem like they did. Merriam-Webster states, ephemeral means lasting a very short time. How can we not remember death when it's coming for all of us? There's an even earlier genre related to memento mori. The Daily Art magazine writes, Vanitas, as a genre, derives from the 15th century morbid obsession with death, also seen in the Ars Moriendi and the motif Memento Mori. All the included elements urge us to meditate upon the ephemeral nature of life and the possibility of sudden death. Okay, just one more. This time, a How to Die Well manual. Then we're done. This time from Wikipedia. Quote, the Ars Moriendi, the Art of Dying, are two related Latin texts dating from about 1415 and 1450, which offer advice on the protocols and procedures of a good death, explaining how to, quote, die well, unquote. According to Christian precepts of the late Middle Ages, it was written within the historical context of the effects of the macabre horrors of the Black Death, unquote. Thank you, Wikipedia. So by the 1400s and 1500s, can you imagine? People were really remembering death because starting in the 1300s and continuing through the 1900s, three plague waves spread, killing around 50 million people, as reported by the World Health Organization. The Black Death, aka the bubonic plague, was in areas including Europe, Africa, Asia, India, North America, South America, UFTA. They learned how it spread, and preventative measures were put in place. A vaccination rolled out at the end of the 1800s, and it took about 30 years to clear most of it. Not 100% gone, but thankfully not widespread, still endemic in a few places. Endemic is specific to a place or population with consistent infection rates. Not all cakes are created equal. Thank heavens. The following nastygram comes from 7 Bizarre Witch Trial Tests, an article on history.com. This is just gross, but we already know all witch trials were trouble. In the article, quote, number 4, witch cakes, a bizarre form of counter magic. The witch cake was a supernatural dessert used to identify suspected evildoers. In cases of mysterious illness or possession, witch hunters would take a sample of the victim's urine, mix it with rye meal and ashes, and bake it into a cake. The stomach-turning concoction was then fed to a dog, the familiars or animal helpers of witches, in the hope that the beast would fall under its spell and reveal the name of the guilty sorcerer. During the hysteria that preceded the Salem witch trials, the slave Tituba famously helped prepare a witch cake to identify the person responsible for bewitching young Betty Paris and others. The brew failed to work, and Tituba's supposed knowledge of spells and folk remedies was later used as evidence against her when she was accused of being a witch. Huh. Okay, then. Actually, not okay. And how did the poor dog get dragged into this? Or the familiars? Somebody said to their neighbor, "Hey, Bob, you know what's grosser than gross?" So these pucks of nasty were called witches' cakes. I guess solid rocket fuel is also called a cake. So many nopes. Besides the unwholesome ingredients, the dog or familiar might have gotten quite literally very sick. Those suspected of being witches may have also been sick, considering ergot fungus was growing on the rye grain. This would cause ergot poisoning and strange symptoms, including psychosis, cramping, and convulsions, aligning neatly with the tells they were looking for during the Salem witch trials in 1692. One possible influence on that crazy train, toot toot. What about a yearly ritual? Well, making a wish and blowing the candles out on a birthday cake? NorEasternHerb.com makes it sound like candle magic. The birthday honoree's name is written on a cake, enough candles to match their age number of birthdays. The people closest to us sing, a wish in thought is then sent to the universe when blowing out the candles. So this run-through was loosely based on the ritual we know and love, an article at NorEasternHerb.com. In the glimmering shadow and light of your memories, do you remember one of your earliest birthday cakes? How far back does that go? When I was very young, our birthday cakes had brass metal angel chimes on top. Now, because I was very young, it could be I'm mashing up birthday cake candles with the candle chimes, but I digress. While I was poking around into what the deal was with the candle chimes, they're more of a Christmas thing. They were originally patented in Germany and are popular in Sweden. Maybe they simply came from somewhere like Grand Central on a whim. What happens is you light the candles and the heat rises and turns the wheel or fan at the top, causing the angels with dangling wands to strike the chime. Candles on the Birthday Cake by Pamela Joyce Randolph. Candles on the birthday cake, one added every year. Each candle holds a memory, each flame a thought sincere. A single match ignites a flame that one swift breath erases. Each flicker sparks a memory of special times and places. Did I ever tell you I made a wedding cake? Kind of random, right? It was kind of a Sandra Lee mashup, like on the Food Network. Partially homemade, gluten-free box mixes so it would rise properly with gluten-free flour and taste like cake. frosted with homemade vanilla white buttercream and decorated with sugar pearls and fresh flowers. Thank heavens for the best man, a trained chef, his fiance too, who helped me finish pulling the cake together at the venue, helping me add the fresh flowers. The cake had 3 2-layer tiers, and this was before I knew about dowels being inserted to support each tier. Luckily, the cake was dense and stood up to gravity. This wedding cake was for my daughter Emily's wedding. She was our co-host on the Whispering Gallery for seasons 1 and 2. I thought it would be fun to bake a cake for this episode. It's been a while, and it's always good to have a reason to bake one. In fact, if you need a nudge in that direction, by all means, go for it. If you need to send me a recipe, just DM me on Facebook. How do I like my eggs? In a cake. By Anonymous. I went on a field research trip to a local kitchen shop in Salt Lake City called Orson Gigi. It's a kitchen specialty store nestled into an industrial area, a large white building. Inside, a wall of cookie cutters, aisles dedicated to pie and cake baking, and then there were the colors for cake decorators, aka pastry artisans or cake artists. Pretty great selection for those of you used to Gamblin and Winsor Newton paint color options. All the way back in 8000 BCE, Egyptians were making honey cake, and the recipe is more familiar than you might expect, with wheat flour, eggs, milk, honey, spices, and yeast for leavening. Around 1500, dates and figs were added. Swiss were making oat cakes, while the ancient Greeks were adding pistachios and pine nuts, and they'd found that beer could be used as leavening. They even had a baker's guild. Rice cakes and Chinese moon cakes, gingerbread, very popular in Europe, and then sponge cake came along, a cake with beaten eggs fluffing things up. From the bakery, the cakes come to us, packaged, wrapped in the likes of a pink bakery box, secured with a bakery sticker that promises something both pretty and delicious. But there's more going on than meets the eye. When cake is a canvas, or can I say it, medium, and I'm not just talking about an artist's medium, more along the lines of a tool for divination. Quote, "Anyway, Harry," said the giant, turning his back on the Dursleys. "A very happy birthday to you. Got summat for you here. I might have sat on it at some point, but it'll taste all right." From an inside pocket of his black overcoat, he pulled a slightly squashed box. Harry opened it with trembling fingers. Inside was a large, sticky chocolate cake with "Happy Birthday, Harry" written on it in green icing. Unquote. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling. I found something for a very small giveaway. I found 2 cute packages of birthday cake flavored Jelly Bellies. The first 2 listeners to like and review the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on, please send me a screenshot of your review with your address, and I will send you a couple of acrylic Lucy skull pins, along with one of the sweet little packages of birthday cake jelly beans, and give you a shout out in the next episode. Due to the shipping costs, I've got to limit this to the continental US. And thank you. I will post on Facebook once I've had the 2 contributors respond. So, which type of birthday food do ghosts prefer? Ice cream cake. Other spooky cakes, we may as well crack the door open, right? We're right here anyway. Soul cakes, also saints cakes, have a bad reputation. Long, long ago, going to a bonfire gathering, picking the wrong cake, the burned one, and you could be the switcheroo human sacrifice to placate the gods about the crops in the coming growing season. Quote, by the 8th century, though, soul cakes had been sanctified and civilized. They were used to pay the beggars who came around on All Souls' Eve and offered to say prayers for the families departed. 1 cake given, 1 soul saved. Elsewhere, they were given to the costumed entertainers known as mummers, who made their merry rounds at Halloween. Today's trick-or-treaters are thought to be their descendants. Unquote. That was by T. Susan Chang in Soul Cake's Hallowed Offerings for Hungry Ghosts on NPR.org. Devil's Food Cake and Angel's Food Cake could have been simply the opposites of each other. Said to have origins in the 1800s, Devil's Food Cake is a deep, rich chocolate cake, decadent, with a more dense consistency than lighter Angel Food Cake made with beaten, fluffy egg whites. Via tastingtable.com, a dark-colored cake and a light-colored cake. Moon cakes in Chinese culture are symbolic of unity of family. Dumb cake was a divination tool helping unmarried women discover who their future husband would be. He might stride into the room where the cake is being made, or a slice of cake under the pillow would aid the future bride's dream of who she was to marry. This via Untold Lives blog of the British Library. King cake, New Orleans. There is a plastic baby in the cake that represents luck and prosperity. If you find it in your piece of cake, you will also be the king or queen for the night. The Persian love cake was said to be made by a young woman who was in love with a prince to help him fall in love with her. It doesn't sound like it was supernatural, but included rose water and spices. Note, many Iranians are not familiar with this story from what I've read. This came via the MediterraneanDish.com. So, as discussed earlier, here are my top 10 baking tips. These came from the research for this episode. The why behind these was really helpful to learn. These worked on the cake I made that I mentioned. There's a reel about it on Facebook. And the Jordan Marsh muffins recipe linked to in the show notes.
10.
So sift dry ingredients together like cake flour, cocoa powder, confectioner sugar, leaveners like baking soda and baking powder so there are no lumps.
9.
Measuring, use glass for liquids instead of metal cups, and use metal cups for your dry ingredients.
8.
Frosting. Crumb coating is a thing. The cake is not ruined. Finish a thin coat of frosting on the cake. You'll see crumbs kind of spreading all over the cake, and you're thinking, this looks horrible. Okay, so you do a thin coat around the cake. Once that's applied, add another coating of frosting. This helps the crumbs coming off the cake not mix in with that final layer of frosting.
7.
Next up, applying frosting. Frosting should be room temperature. Add a generous amount to the middle of the cake and work out from there. Both for layer 1, the middle of the cake and the top of the cake. Then work the frosting onto the sides from the top.
6.
Preparing cake pans. Now this one was important, and getting the cake out of the pans. Butter the cake pan, then draw a circle around the pan using parchment paper. The pan is the template, just using it to draw the pencil around it. Then cut it out and place this in the bottom of the pan where the butter kind of sticks it down to the pan.
5.
Flour the pan where it will stick to the sides, the flour will, and dump out the extra.
4.
Put a little of the batter in each pan, continuing so you can make sure there's approximately the same amount of batter in each pan.
4.
After baking the cake and the toothpick comes out clean, you can tap lightly on the cake to see if it springs back.
3.
Look at the inside edge of the cake pan, and the cake will have climbed the wall of the pan and released. There will be space between the cake and wall of the pan. This helps with getting the cake out of the pan later.
2.
Cool your cakes completely before trying to get them out of the pan. They will more easily tear if you get them out when they're warm. Using a knife, go around the edge of the pan. You can hold the knife in place and turn the pan to go around. This helps release it from the sides of the pan. where it may have stuck in places.
1.
To invert the pan, you can catch the cake with a plate or your hand. The cake should release easily from the pan. Remove the parchment paper from the bottom of the cake. There we have my top 10 tips that kind of got solidified in my brain. The Life of a Cupcake by Shelby Greer at Parade.com. They put me in the oven to bake. Me, a deprived and miserable cake. Feeling the heat, I started to bubble. Watching the others, I knew I was in trouble. They opened the door and I started my life, frosting me with a silver knife. Decorating me with candy jewels, the rest of my batch looked like fools. Lifting me up, she took off my wrapper. Feeling the breeze, I wanted to slap her. Opening her mouth with shiny teeth inside, this was the day the cupcake died. Please consider reaching out to me with any spooky art, haunted museum-type stories so I can share them and give you a shout-out. Contact me at whisperinggallerypodcast.com. Now, I know you hear this from all the podcasts, but you're the best, and I'm glad you're here listening to these stories with me. It would really be lonely and lame to be here all by myself, whistling in the dark, hoping my flashlight batteries will make it through the night. If you are looking for the art mentioned in this episode, please visit facebook.com/whisperinggallerystories and or thewhisperinggallerypodcast.com. Studio dog updates. Shotzi, our mini dachshund, and Boomer, well, he has a little news. He had his DNA done with Embarked. He is 59% Chihuahua, 23.9 Super Mutt, and 17.1 Min Pin. They define the Super Mutt for him as being dachshund, Cocker Spaniel, American Eskimo dog, and poodle small. Shotzi and Boomer are doing well, and it's time for their vaccination updates. They had a visitor for a couple of weeks. Her name was Allie, a gray and tan mini dachshund who we fostered. They all hung out together during her visit, and unfortunately, Allie lost 12 teeth during her dental. But she got all caught up on her vaccinations, received a microchip. When she was all healed up, she was adopted by her forever family. If you'd like to see a photo of Allie, please visit Rocky Mountain Dachshund Rescue's page on Facebook. What do you call a sick birthday cake? A coffee cake. If you enjoyed this podcast about cake, you might want to check out the Cake Therapy podcast. I've been creating whisperinggallerypodcast.com for me and you. Citations and attributions are coming together, and you can visit the collections area to visit by area of focus like monsters and ghosts. I started up a small shop for the Whispering Gallery podcast and have taken to using the WGP for short, kind of like the big museums have abbreviations, like the Met. Look for a t-shirt, baseball hat, or water bottle to keep your day a little on the spooky side. There are two shirts with Vincent van Gogh's art that is in the public domain, a landscape and a vase of iris. Check out Vincent's Mysteries episodes of the Whispering Gallery. Vincent painted amidst the magnitude of his storms. Was his love of brilliant yellow related to the lesions on his brain? The stories include his ghost painting, the ever-present shadow of his illness, and letters to his brother Teo. Please check out whisperinggallerypodcast.com. Remember to rate the Whispering Gallery podcast and to subscribe if you enjoyed the story. And if you have friends or family who like to bake, please share this episode with them. Word of mouth seems to be the best way to grow the show, like the shampoo commercial in the 70s. You tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and so on and so on. If you aren't sure which episode to share, one of the listener favorites by far is the episode Vaporous Prophecy and Gosmer Magic, Part 1 and 2. You can find the Whispering Gallery podcast on Facebook. Please give a like and follow. I'd love to have you join our community there. Again, it's facebook.com/whisperinggallerystories. For the credits, thanks for staying with me to finish up this episode. Here's a bit of the fine details. Subscribe to the Whispering Gallery podcast and join the community of spooky art fans. Links from this episode are in the show notes at whisperinggallerypodcast.com. The Whispering Gallery podcast is written and produced by Suzanne Nicolaisen in Utah. All efforts are to present true information surrounding strange art stories. Theme music, The Toy Piano Boogie, was composed and performed by the Piccadilly Pipers. Additional music and sound effects attributions are in the show notes, as is the art referenced in this episode, cited at whisperinggallerypodcast.com and other research links. Many thanks to Free Sound and the talented audio contributors. No part of this podcast can be used anywhere without permission. Thank you. Copyright 2024, Suzanne Nicolaisen, Whispering Gallery Podcast. Until next time, gallery goers, remember to keep your flashlights close and your spooky art stories closer when visiting the Whispering Gallery. Take care.